Matthew chapter 18, verses 15 through 17. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault, between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every change may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And he refuses to listen to the church, even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector.
Well, how do you view conflict? How do you look at conflict? The answer to this question matters a lot, because the way you answer that question is going to impact how you respond to conflict. We've been in this series called Becoming a Peacemaker, and we've been talking about what's behind all of the conflict we have. We've talked about why it matters so much that we resolve conflict that we have with each other. And we've talked about how our ultimate hope in resolving conflict is not in ourselves, is not in the other person changing. Our ultimate hope is in the gospel of Jesus. So today, we're going to start addressing how we actually respond in situations of conflict. And as I've said, the way we respond to conflict is going to be directly impacted by how we view conflict. Jeremy, my husband, likes to watch a YouTube channel of this guy, JP the Bee Man, who helps move bee colonies. So someone finds like a huge mess of bees in their yard, and they call JP the Bee Man, and he comes and moves them to a safer place for them. Now, if you called me to move a beehive, I would freak right out, okay? I hate flying, buzzing, stinging things. I see them as a threat. I see in their little faces a desire to violently attack anyone who comes too close. So if you called me to the beehive, my response would likely be a giant can of Raid. My view of bees impacts how I respond to bees. Yes? I see them as a threat, so my response is to either run away or try and kill them. But JP, when JP gets a call about bees, he reacts really differently. To JP, bees are not a threat. Bees are a vulnerable population that need protection. Bees are a vital part of the environment. Bees are beautiful and amazing little creatures that just need a safe place to grow their family and to protect our earth. So when JP gets a call that there's a whole bunch of bees somewhere they don't belong, he just kind of saunters over, takes a look. Most of the time, he doesn't even wear like a beekeeping suit. It's just bare arms and all, hanging out with the bees, checking out the situation. He moves the bees gently to a safe place. JP moves the bees calmly. I see bees as a threat. My response is to eliminate the threat or run away. JP, the bee man, sees them as vital, as peaceful. So his response is unconcerned, gentle. The way we see something impacts the way we respond to it. Some of us see conflict as an obstacle. It's something in the way to us getting what we want. So we attack, we destroy, we get out the giant can of Raid. Some of us see conflict as a threat to our relationships. I think especially in the church, we think that conflict at all is bad. It's not supposed to happen. We're all Christians. We're supposed to just get along. And so we see any evidence of conflict at all as like something sinful or something. So we avoid it at all costs. But if we saw conflict as inevitable, we won't be so surprised by it when it happens. If we believe that conflict is just a natural thing that happens between humans who see the world differently than each other, we won't feel threatened by it. We won't pull out the can of Raid. What if we see conflict as an opportunity? If we saw conflict as an opportunity to serve someone else, to learn more about someone else, what if we saw conflict as an opportunity to actually bring God glory? What if we saw conflict that way? So today we're going to talk about some responses to conflict that come out of particular views of conflict. There's a great book that I've referenced a couple times already in this series called The Peacemaker by Ken Sandy. And in his book, this image that I've borrowed, it's his. He talks about conflict responses in terms of peace-faking responses over there on the left, peace-breaking responses on the right, and a variety of peace-making responses in the middle. So today we're going to see how the way we view conflict impacts the way we respond across the spectrum when conflict happens. We're going to talk first about peace faking responses. Peace faking responses are escape responses. They're flight responses. Peace faking responses are what happen when we see conflict as something to be avoided at all costs, as a threat. Peace faking responses are what happen when we are much more interested in avoiding conflict than in resolving it. So as I said earlier, I think in the church, this is a pretty common response. So many of us have this fear that conflict in itself is bad. We fear that any conflict at all will irreparably harm our relationships. It'll do damage to our witness as followers of Jesus. And so we think the Christian thing to do, I'm going to put that in quotes, Christian thing to do is to just fake peace. Now, there's a few different kinds of peace faking responses. One peace faking response is denial. A denial response to a conflict pretends the conflict didn't happen. It ignores the signs that something's not right. Denial is like when everyone in your journey group knows that there's like beef between two people and no one talks about it. You just pretend, oh, we're all Christians. We love each other here. It's fine. All of these, by the way, have examples in the Bible of this happening too, okay? It's not just us. It's been forever. The example of this in the Bible is Genesis 16. Sarah has been wanting to have a baby. She can't get pregnant. So she hands Hagar, her servant, over to her husband Abraham to say, have a child with her. Then she gets mad when Hagar gets pregnant. She gets jealous. And so Abraham's response is, oh, just do whatever you think is best. Whew. Abraham does not want to deal with that. He does not want to get involved. He doesn't want to think about what's actually going to happen when Sarah does what she thinks is best in the situation. He denies that there's a problem and just moves right along without getting involved. That's denial. Another peace-faking response is flight. Now, again, in some cases, flight might be an appropriate response, right? If someone is physically harming you, get out of the situation. That's an appropriate flight response. Sometimes stepping away from a situation temporarily to regain some perspective, to be able to have a healthy conversation, that can be good. But many times we misuse that flight response because we're just afraid of the conflict. We don't like the feeling of being in conflict, of having that conversation. We refuse to deal with it, and so we leave. We might file for divorce. We might stop talking to a friend and end the friendship. We might leave a church and find a new church. In the Bible, the example of this is Jacob in Genesis 31. In Genesis 31, Jacob's relationship with his father-in-law, Laban, starts to sour over time. And he realizes it's probably time to go. All that's fine. But Jacob packs up and leaves in the middle of the night without telling his father-in-law that he's going to be going or that there's a problem. Flight does not solve the problem, friends. It doesn't. If you constantly flee instead of resolving conflict, you will never be able to enjoy deep and lasting relationships. So that's flight. And a third extreme peace-faking response is suicide. The most tragic funeral I ever officiated was that of a man whose wife had filed for divorce after many attempts for her to get him to confront his extremely controlling behavior. He didn't want to deal with it. She filed for divorce, and instead of dealing with any of that, he ended his life. Obviously, there's lots of reasons why people might end their lives in that tragic way, but the extreme outcome here, do you see this? These are like moving from maybe less extreme to more extreme. The most extreme outcome of avoiding conflict, of not dealing with things, could be to end your life. The biblical example of this is Judas in Matthew 27. Judas realizes how badly he's failed, but he cannot imagine a resolution. Judas cannot imagine ever being forgiven, and so he ends his own life. So these are three peace-faking responses. This is avoiding the conflict. Denial, flight, suicide. This is what we do when we want to keep up the illusion of peace at the expense of experiencing real peace. That's peace-faking. On the other end of this continuum, we have peace-breaking responses. Peace-breaking responses are attack responses, fight responses. We respond to conflict like this when we see conflict as a contest with only one winner. where another person is maybe just an obstacle in our way to what we want, where we are most concerned with ourselves and our own rights. Peace breaking is concerned with winning, and it will forfeit justice, actual peace, unity, to achieve the win. One peace-breaking response is assault. Now, assault is when we use force or intimidation to try and move someone else to do what we want. This can be verbally, with angry or abusive language hurled at another person in order to get them to yield. It can be physical, where we harm other people in order to get them to do what we want. It can happen by damaging someone else's reputation or trying to ruin them financially. The biblical example of this is in Acts 5. The religious leaders want Peter and the apostles to stop talking about Jesus, stop saying he's the Son of God. And so they try and silence them by arresting them and beating them. They assault them to try and get what they want. Another peace-breaking response is litigation. Litigation is when we bring someone to court. Now, with just like flight, litigation can sometimes be an appropriate tool when we're challenging systemic injustice, when we're trying to prevent somebody in our society from causing further harm to others. But litigation here is categorized as a peace-breaking response because it will terminate a relationship. Sometimes that loss is worth the outcome. But both Jesus in Matthew and Paul in 1 Corinthians warn against rushing to court to solve issues that could be solved by a healthy conversation. Jesus says in Matthew 5 that if you have a dispute with somebody or you hear that someone has something against you, the best thing to do, the wisest thing to do is just go right to them and talk to them one-on-one. Try and solve it. It will almost always be a better result than pushing things to a court to decide. So a third, and on the other extreme of peace-breaking response here, is murder. This is what happens in Genesis 4. Cain was jealous of his brother Abel and how God received Abel's offering, right? Understandable. But instead of looking inward, trying to figure out why God may have received Abel's offering differently, instead of going to Abel and trying to understand what Abel's heart was and how he brought his offering, instead of trying to resolve the painful experience he had, he turned to murder. He killed his own brother because he was so mad that God liked Abel's offering better. It was a competition, and he had to win. So that's peace faking on the one hand and peace breaking on the other hand. These are what happen when we view conflict as a threat to be avoided or a contest to win. But what if we see conflict differently, right? What if we see conflict as an opportunity? When we see conflict as an opportunity, then we can utilize approaches to conflict resolution that will lead to deeper relationships as an outcome, stronger community as an outcome, and a better testimony to the world as an outcome. Peacemaking responses are aimed at finding a mutually agreeable solution to a conflict. Mutually agreeable solution. Peacemaking responses put in the long, hard work to achieve a just peace, a genuine peace. The goal of peacemaking is not to win, it is not to avoid a conflict, it is to strengthen the relationship. Now, there's a variety of peacemaking responses talked about in the Bible, too. We're going to talk about kind of two categories of peacemaking responses. We're going to talk about personal peacemaking, which is just you and me, one-on-one, the two people involved, personal peacemaking. And then we're going to talk about assisted peacemaking, where we invite somebody else in to help resolve the conflict. So let's look first at these personal peacemaking responses. The first one is overlook. Sometimes we skip this as a potential solution to a conflict. Overlooking is a viable option in conflict. It's a form of forgiveness. It's a choice to not think about what happened, not talk about what happened, not dwell on what happened, not let what happened grow into bitterness. It's a choice to choose to let go of what happened. This is what Proverbs says, a person's wisdom yields patience, and it is to one's glory to overlook an offense. Overlooking is a viable option when the conflict is insignificant enough that you can genuinely look past it and move on. Right? If one of my kids snaps at me at the end of the day, I know they're tired. They're probably hungry. They had school. It was MCAS last week. So I can overlook it. We don't need to have any longer conversation. I'm just going to choose to move on. It's not a big deal. Sometimes, though, we can't genuinely overlook something. If it's been a day or two and you're still kind of playing through what happened in your head, if you're telling yourself now a story about what was behind somebody else's words or actions, that's okay. It just means overlooking is not the right response. There's a different one you need to try. So a second personal peacemaking option is a reconciliation conversation. This is what Matthew 18:15 is about. If your brother or sister, if somebody in your family sins against you, go to them. Talk to them about it. If what happened was too serious to overlook, if it's causing the relationship to suffer, which, by the way, if you're avoiding someone, the relationship is suffering, okay? Just let me just put that out there. If the relationship is suffering, it's time to go talk to them about it, because you can't overlook it, and that's okay. You just need a different response. So just before this passage that Brian read for us in Matthew 18, Jesus was talking about a shepherd who lovingly sought out his lost sheep. So a reconciliation conversation is meant to look like that. A reconciliation conversation is not a chance to berate another person, shame another person with a long list of their faults. Reconciliation is an opportunity instead to imitate our loving shepherd who overflows with grace and forgiveness towards us. Reconciliation is an invitation. It involves humbly confessing your part in the conflict, then lovingly sharing what bothered you, what hurt you, and inviting a conversation. Can you help me understand? This is what you said. This is how I took it. Can you help me understand? That's a great question for a reconciliation conversation. The hopeful outcome of a reconciliation conversation is forgiveness. Forgiveness offered, forgiveness received, and the relationship strengthened. That's reconciliation. A third personal peacemaking option is negotiation. So negotiation is helpful when you have material issues to work through. So who gets what from mom's estate after she passes, or how can I repay my neighbor for the baseball that my child hit through the window, right? Material, physical things, property things that you need to work through. Negotiation is a process of cooperative bargaining, in which you and the other person seek a settlement that meets the needs of both sides. So negotiation as a peacemaking response has to operate in good faith for it to work, right? It has to be done with Philippians 2:4 in mind. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. For negotiation to work, both parties have to care not only about themselves, but about the other. Negotiation in my house looks like, okay, kids, you can stay up later, which they want, but you have to shower before you play video games, which I want. So these are personal peacemaking responses, right? Overlook, reconciliation, conversation, and negotiation. Responses to conflict that involve only you and most of them, the other person. But sometimes personal peacemaking doesn't work. Maybe you tried a reconciliation conversation, but they weren't interested. They weren't open. Maybe you tried to negotiate, but you couldn't really come to an agreement on your own. Personal peacemaking is also not always advisable, right? In situations where there's a power imbalance, like Jeff Bezos is probably not going to care what a factory worker says at Amazon, right? That's not advisable. Situations of abuse, it's not advisable to make a victim of abuse sit one-on-one with their abuser. And sometimes we just can't make it work with just personal peacemaking. So sometimes we need the help of others. And that's what we call assisted peacemaking strategies. The three assisted peacemaking strategies are mediation, arbitration, and accountability. So mediation. Mediation involves bringing an objective third party to help with peace. A mediator who can help two people communicate who are struggling to reach reconciliation. A mediator can ask questions. A mediator can offer advice. They don't have any ability to, like, force a solution, but they can offer some kind of helpful outside perspective that can maybe enable the two parties to help each other understand. This is such a helpful and underutilized tool for us in the church, right? We love each other here in the church. If you are struggling with another person here at Harbor, If you're having an issue with someone else in your journey group, probably there's at least one other person who loves both of you, who could help you figure out the conflict you can't solve on your own. That's part of our elder job, our elder team's job here at Harbor. We can be objective and caring third parties to help resolve conflict between people. Let's help each other. Another assisted peacemaking approach is called arbitration. So arbitration, this is the approach that Paul suggests in 1 Corinthians 6. Paul challenges the Corinthian church because they keep taking each other to court. He's like, guys, is there seriously nobody in the church that's wise enough to help you figure this out? Nobody in the church can help figure out a solution? You got to take it to court? In arbitration, you appoint an objective third party to listen and then make a decision, a binding decision. So you find someone that you both trust to be fair, and then you ask them to decide. Again, we can help each other here, friends. We are a family. We love each other. This is a way we can come alongside each other and help. Arbitration also happens regularly in my house. The kids can't agree on how to split the last bit of the apple juice. There's not enough for two full cups of apple juice. So I become the arbitrator. Okay, one of you pour the two cups as evenly as you can. And then the other one gets to choose first. That's arbitration. The third assisted peacemaking approach is called accountability. You've probably heard this word. It's what Jesus is talking about in Matthew 18. You've tried reconciliation, talking to someone one-on-one. You've tried mediation, bringing another person or two into it. And now it says you tell it to the church. You tell it to the community, understanding that if the person still won't make changes, the church is responsible to hold that person accountable. Listen, I know that sometimes people have read in this passage, in Matthew 18:17, a call to sort of excommunicate from the church anybody who doesn't act how they think we should, how we think they should. We have all seen tragic cases of people in pain harmed by the church by some twisted application of this passage. But that's not what Jesus is suggesting here. Jesus is not talking about just casting people out when they don't agree with us on theological matters. Jesus is talking about people here who pridefully refuse to stop harming someone else. People who stubbornly refuse to engage in a process of reconciliation. In those cases, Jesus is saying the church has a responsibility to set boundaries so someone can't keep causing harm in the community. What that looks like might be different based on the circumstances, but we have that responsibility as a church to make sure that nobody here is causing harm to anybody else. So these are three ways of responding to conflict: peacemaking, peace faking, and peace breaking. Three different kinds of ways to respond to conflict based on how we see it. If we see conflict as a threat, we'll avoid it or bring the raid. If we see it as an obstacle and a way of winning what we want, we'll go on the attack. But if we see conflicts as normal, unavoidable parts of being human, if we see conflict as an opportunity to extend God's love, to deepen a relationship, to show the world how Jesus changes us, then we can actually be glad for opportunities to practice peacemaking. Conflict with my kids becomes an opportunity to show them something about God's love and mercy. Conflict in my journey group becomes an opportunity to show grace and acceptance to my sibling in Christ. It becomes an opportunity to show the world around us that the love of God changes the way we do relationships. Friends, we live in a world that is dying from our inability to deal well with conflict. In the midst of this, we, the church, need to see our conflicts as an opportunity to show the world a better way. When we look at the possibilities, conflict can actually be something we're grateful for. I've experienced this many times where I feel grateful for a conflict conversation I had to have. It happened to me a couple months ago after an elders meeting. I love our elders, you guys. Our elders are godly people who love you, love me, love Jesus. They're all good friends of mine. But I went home after a meeting one time and I realized I felt a little bit defensive about something my friend Abby said. It was a little thing, but it was playing in my head all night. When I woke up the next morning, I was still thinking about it. I was telling myself a story about what was behind what she said. And because now I've learned to see conflict as an opportunity, I knew that talking to Abby was an opportunity for us to practice resolving conflict in the little things so that we would be ready for the big things. So I called my friend Abby, and I confessed to her how I was feeling about our conversation the night before. I apologized for being oversensitive, for being defensive. And I asked her, just, can you clarify what you meant by that? She graciously heard me. She shared her perspective. She apologized for how her words, even though she didn't intend them to, had impacted me. It was beautiful. Guys, I actually felt giddy when we get off the phone. I know it seems crazy to be happy for opportunities to practice conflict resolution, but it made me happy because I can see down the road. I can see the long game here. I can see how this practice of conflict resolution over little things means that now when it's time for something bigger, I have hard evidence that Abby's going to respond to me with grace and love. I know because I've seen her do it. This is what happens when we see conflict not as a threat, not as an obstacle, but as a normal part of being human and as an opportunity to glorify God and strengthen our relationships. So today, I want you to think about, how do you tend to resolve or react to conflict? Do you tend toward peace-faking responses? Do you tend toward peace-breaking responses? Does it maybe differ based on who you're in conflict with? As you go through your week this week, as you pay attention to the conflicts you have, the little ones and the big ones, I would invite you to maybe even keep a journal. Each night, maybe sit down and write out how you reacted to various conflict throughout your day. Notice your response. Maybe you can even do some thinking about a particular person you have maybe an ongoing and long conflict with. And then try out a peacemaking response. There's a whole bunch of them. Give it a shot. Pick one and try it. Peacemaking will feel awkward, okay? It will feel awkward. It is vulnerable to tell another person, what you said made me feel bad. What you said hurt my feelings. That is vulnerable. It is risky. But peacemaking conversations like that are also the only way to have long, healthy relationships. They're the only way. So right now, I'm going to pray. And then I want to invite you to spend a few minutes just asking God, what is it he wants to say to you about your habits of peacemaking, your responses in conflict? So take a few moments and just pray about that. Ask God for his help. Be honest with him about where you are. Ask him for help. And then when you're ready, come up and take communion. Communion is the bread and the juice are the physical reminders of the one who accomplished peace for us in his death and resurrection. It is Jesus who accomplished peace. And it is Jesus who empowers us to choose peace every day in every conflict. So I'm going to pray and then take some time to listen to what God's saying and then come take communion when you're ready. Jesus, thank you. Thank you that you accomplished for us what we could not accomplish on our own. You accomplished a deep and lasting peace that we know is what we are headed towards. We confess that we all, because of our backgrounds, because of previous experiences, we all have responses to conflict that are not healthy, that are not helpful. So we confess those to you now, and we ask for your help to choose peacemaking responses, to choose responses to conflict that will strengthen relationships and demonstrate your love. Help us as a community as we keep walking towards this goal of becoming peacemakers. We want to do that because we want to look like you, Jesus. Jesus, you are our peace. So we trust you to keep transforming us till we look more and more like you. And it's in your powerful name we pray, Jesus. Amen.